Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Well, it was once again a Max Verstappen masterclass on the streets of Jeddah. And not only that, we can finally stop saying a Sauber waiting for the Audi money. Because as we heard this weekend, the Audi money has finally come in. Welcome to Grid Talk. My name is Tom Downing, and here today we are going to discuss the 2024 Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Joining me, we have Jawad Yaqub.
Hi there. Good day.
Good morning, sir. We also have the F1 historian, Alex Booth.
Hello.
And last but by perhaps some means least, we have the F1 Grid Talk co-host and good friend, Owen Medford.
Cheers for that, Tom. Thanks.
That's all right, mate. I like to keep you on your toes. Just before we go on, we must thank our sponsor for this episode, Bet Online. So Bet Online is your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, and more. Bet Online continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device today to sign up and get in on the action. Remember to use the promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. Also, please be sure to follow us on our new socials, @GridTalkUK, to stay up to date with the show. So, the 2024 Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, it was certainly more action-packed than last year's, because last year's was a bit of a snooze fest, but we did have the sort of same result, a Red Bull 1-2 and all that fun stuff that goes with it. But Jawad, we're not going to talk about the Red Bulls, or certainly not straight away, because there's a bit of news this weekend, and we joked about the Saubers earlier, but the sort of parent company of the Saubers, or certainly their engine suppliers, Ferrari, have had a bit of a weekend. So Carlos Sainz, obviously taken unwell after FP2, I believe it was, with a case of appendicitis. And young 18-year-old Oliver Bearman was drafted in. After taking pole in F2, he was thrust into the limelight and given a shot in that Ferrari. And my word, what a weekend for him. He qualified P11, had a very good race, and ultimately finished P7 to score points on debut for the team in red. What more can we say about that?
Yeah, you can't really, because he lapped up all the driver of the day votes as well, the majority in the F1 feed, and I think on the Grid Talk Slack channel as well, everyone voted for him. What an impressive debut, and it's a big step up, you know, particularly when you haven't done a lot of testing in a modern F1 car as well. I know F2 this year, they're using a new generation of car, trying to be close to the new ground effect F1 cars, but it's, yeah, just quite impressive to see. You know, one thing comes to mind when you think of Ferrari substitutes is, you know, surely no one can be as bad as Luca Badoa was in 2009. So thankfully we didn't see that from Bearman. But yeah, to miss out on Q3 by, 0.039 seconds or whatever the margin was, and then holding his own in the race as well to finish in the points. Yes, you know, if anyone wants to be a sad person, we'll say, but he's in a Ferrari, so he should be, you know, at the front. No, I think stepping in for your first ever race weekend in an F1 car at one of the most challenging circuits. I mean, if it was somewhere like Bahrain or anywhere with immense runoff and whatnot and less margin for error, it might be a bit easier. But, you know, for what it is, he's stepped in, he's done an amazing job. Definitely put himself in the shop window seat in the future. I guess what will be a bit annoying. I mean, not that there can be anything annoying about making your F1 debut for Ferrari at 18, is that he did then effectively miss this weekend's weather F2. So whether that's going to hurt his championship prospects there or not. But I think, you know, even if he doesn't eventuate as F2 champion this year, to have driven for Ferrari in a Grand Prix would have been dream come true. And also shout out to his dad as well. I think most of the entertainment for us this weekend has come from watching his dad's reactions in the Ferrari garage. So it's such a wholesome feeling. And I think amongst all the negativity that's gone on with the sport being in disrepute with all this off-track nonsense, it's one of the more wholesome stories that we've been treated to this year, and it really makes me feel quite warm and fuzzy. So, yeah, well done to Ollie.
Absolutely. And you touched upon, you know, the sort of what he's done for his chances. Just want to come to the rest of the panel. So, you know, we mentioned about him being 18, obviously sort of quite high up in F2. Do we think, any of us chaps, that he's perhaps put himself in the sort of limelight for a seat next season? Alex, do you think we could maybe see him on the grid in early as 2025?
Well, you muted, Alex.
There's a mute button, Alex.
There we are, I'm back. Yes, I do. I think Haas is a very strong possibility for him in 2025. I can see that happening. He has a few Friday practice sessions lined up. He's certainly done himself no harm with his performance today, because it worked for, he's put it in the past, it worked for Nick de Vries after his performance in Monza in 2022. Obviously, I know the AlphaTauri venture didn't go as well as he was expecting, but that one-off race did give him the opportunity to join them. So the same thing could happen to Ollie Bearman. We'll see how the rest of the F2 campaign goes. As Joe had mentioned, if there is one thing that's slightly negative about the weekend, is the fact that he could have been in the lead of the championship in that series. But there's still a long way to go, so I'm sure he'll still feature. I'm putting it out there now. I predict that he'll be at a Haas in 2025.
That is a very bold prediction, but I, for one, assume I have to see that. Owen, what do you think about his chances for a 2025 seat?
Well, I think he's just got so much more on any of the other F2 drivers on the grid right now. No matter where he finishes, obviously, unless he has a complete shocker, but, you know, he's got a level of experience that, honestly, the rest of them can't manage. That's not through anything but with our own, but sometimes, you know, that was... You know, what's the old adage? You know, what is it? Luck is where opportunity meets planning, or something like that. You know, he's done a very, very good job, to the point of even be considered for a Ferrari race seat just to step in at no notice. Let's be honest. There's so many drivers up at the end of contract, and I think he would have been fairly highly rated anyway, pending the results of this F2 season. But I think that this, you know, the extra experience that going around Jeddah, you know, that's not an easy track, and we saw Lance Stroll, who's been in Formula One for many a year at this point, you know, managed to clip the barriers, and Bearman didn't do that. Whether he's driving within himself or not, I think, is neither here nor there. He didn't clip the barriers, he didn't make a fool of himself, he gained places. Yeah, I fully agree with Alex. There's going to be a seat available for him if he continues on like this.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly from my perspective, I'd love to see him on the grid in 2025, and I certainly do not think he's done himself any harm. But speaking of Haas, they're looking a bit better this year, I think it's fair to say. Alex, you know, obviously Haas last year, we saw them struggle severely in race trim, often dropping like an absolute stone towards the back of the grid, and, you know, they only ended up with a handful of points last year. This year, whilst, you know, they didn't get points today, and obviously Kevin Magnussen put some rather staunch defending, shall we say, but he had two separate 10-second penalties today. The car, to the untrained eye of someone like myself, it certainly appears to be not working its rear tyres quite as aggressively, and they certainly look to be able to sort of hold their own in race pace a bit more. Also, we saw quite a lot of team work coming into it. Into this race today, with K-Mag sort of bridging that huge gap. Do you think this is something we see more of in F1, you know, with this whole sort of like teammates working together more? Because we have seen it, certainly with, you know, the Red Bull have, you know, had their issues. We've seen it with the Mercs coming together, Ferraris backing each other last year in Monza. Do you think we need to see more of this kind of like teamwork cohesion in F1?
Well, that sort of thing's happened before. It will no doubt happen again. I reckon at the end of the day, the driver's job is to do the best they can for the team. And in today's circumstances, with Magnussen having two separate 10-second penalties, then that was his race severely compromised. So the only thing he could really do was help Nico Hülkenberg out. And it paid off because Hülkenberg finished in 10th place, picked up 1 point, which last week I was saying that if the top five teams all finish, then it'd be very difficult for any of the other teams to get points. But that didn't happen today. So, and as you mentioned, Haas are looking a lot more competitive, especially in race pace. They seem to have the edge on Sauber, matches if not quicker than the Williams, and certainly the Alpine. So, yeah, the signs are good for the season ahead, really. I think that they'll certainly have a better season than last year.
Absolutely. I don't think that season could have got much worse for them, let's be fair. Although 2021 for them runs it close. But
that was the worst.
That's just the less said about that season for Haas, the better, I think. But no, if you're a fan of a sort of five-star defence like that, or if you're feeling sort of just like a five-star human overall, be sure to leave us a five-star rating on Spotify or a five-star review on Apple Podcasts. That's not one of my best segues, but it'll do. All right, let's have a quick sort of look at McLaren and Mercedes, because certainly Lando Norris, it was Oscar Piastri, and Lewis Hamilton were sort of entwined in a bit of a battle where they were playing DRS slingshot with each other. We saw that McLaren, when it opened its DRS, it looked like it almost sort of gained more drag, which is quite impressive for something that's called drag reduction system. You're an engineering mechanically person. This should be a good one for you to sort of sink your teeth into. Just give us your thoughts on that sort of whole battle that went on for the first sort of two stints really of this race.
I mean, I think the DRS, you know, it really did look like, I'll put it this way, it looked like McLaren had been copying Red Bull's homework from the last couple of years with their DRS efficiency, but unfortunately they'd been reading it upside down or something like that, because as you say, it almost added a bit more like a parachute. I'm not going to get into the dark art of aerodynamics, but I think as we saw with the Norris battle later on, where typically, I mean, you'd say that having a slightly lower downforce setup, as Williams have proved multiple times in previous years with this spec of car, can you just being that bit slipperier on the straights can sort of shield you from attacks or allow you to breeze past if you've got similar, you know, decent enough performance in the corners. And I think what McLaren have clearly done is they've put kind of a bit of a barn door on the front and rear of those McLarens. And as we saw with Norris, he just pulled away in the first sector. pulled away in the first sector. And I think that to really understand the Piastri battle, you have to look at that and see that when Piastri was behind, when you flip the scenario, clearly the advantage of having that, the advantage of having that much higher wing setting to go through the first sector didn't help Piastri when he robbed it of the downforce following the Mercedes. And then obviously you've still got a load of drag on the straights and opening the DRS. You know, they only had, what I think the figure was like 6 kilometers an hour, which is, you know, I can literally walk faster than that. So that's the kind of speed that you'd be walking up to the back of a fairly quick Mercedes on the same power unit. We don't know about the power settings, but we have to assume that they'd be fairly similar from a reliability standpoint. So unfortunately, I think McLaren, yeah, if you're Piastri, it just wouldn't work for them because you were just losing so much time in that first sector. But obviously, like I say, flip it on its head and put the McLaren in front, and we're seeing it gain 6 tenths. So I don't think it's so much about McLaren having this weird enigmatic DRS that somehow when it's stalling the rear wing, you know, causes the air currents to create this massive amount of drag, but you know, clearly it's not as effective as anyone else's.
Fair enough. I'm going to pretend I understood every single part of what you just said. But yeah, no, on a sort of serious note, you made a good point where it looks like McLaren have attempted to copy Red Bull's homework, but perhaps not got it quite right. You know, that is a pretty good way of sort of summing it up. Speaking of Red Bull, this question will be a wider talking point for all three of us, so please feel free to come with me for this one. We've seen that the second Red Bull team, so VCAR, but if we inadvertently call them AlphaTauri or Toro Rosso, or if you're Owen and you call them Minardi, apart from Owen being difficult, it's not us being difficult, it's just, yeah, I genuinely forget sometimes that they have changed their name. So the second Red Bull team, you know, VCAR, RB Racing, whatever you'd like to call them, last season we had a lot of speculation and a lot of talk, rumours, etc., that Daniel Ricciardo was coming back into the sport. He's going to take Sergio Perez's seat. And some people were speculating that Perez was going to be dropped and that there was going to be an announcement in Mexico last year. Obviously, none of that came to fruition. Let's not forget that we have, I think, 13 drivers out of contract this season, or at the end of this season. So for 2025, both Daniel Ricciardo and Sergio Perez and Yuki Tsunoda, all three of them, as it stands, are not in contract for their current teams for next year. Based on what we've seen today and also last weekend in that second Red Bull, or sorry, in the V-Cup, do any of you think that there's even a remote chance at the moment of Daniel Ricciardo taking that seat or Sergio Perez? Bear in mind, Perez has finished second to his teammate, who is just walking away with the championship once again. Do you think there's any chance of that happening at the moment?
Being realistic, I would say it's still too early in the season to see or to make a decision on that. So last year, of course, as well, we saw Perez being quite strong in this early part of the season. It took him till Miami before, you know, I guess mentally he was broken and couldn't really recover from that. And certainly hoping that this year he doesn't fall into that trap of being kind of goated or gaslit into thinking he can win the championship. And I think Rachel Brooks of Sky, after this race, was asking the same question. I'm like, well, we all know that's not going to happen. So why bother, you know, trying to get in his head about it? So yeah, my bold prediction coming into this season is that I feel like Perez is going to see out the season with Red Bull, but also announce that this will be his last season in F1. He's had a great track record. You know, he's been on the grid for more than a decade. He's notched up race wins, podiums. He's driven for multiple teams. So, you know, while I know there's some people on this forum who do like to go after Perez a little bit and let's not make any bets with sombreros this time, you know, he is reliable in what he's demonstrated so far. Yes, it is early in the season. Is a lot more impressive than what I see from Daniel Ricciardo. And with Ricciardo as well, I mean, it's not like we should forget the couple of years at McLaren. Yes, you know, the race win stands out like a sore thumb, but at the end of the day, his performance overall was quite underwhelming compared to Lando Norris. And, you know, the fact that last week, you know, Alex, you were commenting on the friction between the teammates that we saw in Bahrain and Yuki Tsunoda being a bit immature with his conduct afterwards. Like, I don't rate either of those two as being potential Red Bull drivers in the future. Ricciardo, I guess, because he's a known entity to the team, but it's time we moved on. You know, we've got Liam Lawson waiting in the wings. You got other drivers, you know, your Alex Albons, your Carlos Sainzes, who, you know, need to be in race-winning teams. So I'd look at them before I'd look at Ricciardo. And, you know, Ricciardo's result this weekend, whether it was a problem with his chassis or not, as being suggested, he was nowhere. He was nowhere except for at the back of the grid. So I'm sorry, I wouldn't put him in a Red Bull anytime soon.
I mean, yeah, I'm sort of fairly strong on the whole, you know, Daniel Ricciardo's not going back to Red Bull. So I'm, you know, that's in my viewpoint. But you made some great points there, Jared. Alex, what do you think about, you know, not only the sort of V-Carb RB racing sponsored by Klarna, Visa, Cash App, PayPal, whatever they're called? I generally lose track. Yeah, do you think there's any sort of any merit to this? You know, do you think Danny Rick will stay with that team for another season? Do you think he'll move? You know, there are certainly questions, and like Jared mentioned, there's the potential of Liam Lawson in there as well after his super sub appearances last year.
They certainly can't keep ignoring Liam Lawson, given his super sub appearances, as you mentioned. What I will say is, if Ricciardo does end up in a Red Bull, that's an absolute outrage. He's done nothing, apart from that one race win in Monza, he's done nothing in the last 5 years that really warrants a driver the best car, which is my opinion. With regards to Yuki Tsunoda, Honda will no longer be associated with Red Bull after 2025, so he'll be gone when that happens. It's fine, I think. With regards to Sergio Perez, depending on at the moment the contract is Max Verstappen's going to be there until 2028, I think as long as Verstappen's there, I think Red Bull will be happy to keep Perez in because he'll do the job for the team, i.e. be there for when Verstappen has a technical failure. And in other words, finish second to him and get the Constructors' Championship for them, which today he did very well. If the whole saga continues and either Christian Horner goes or Helmut Marko goes, certainly if Helmut Marko ends up going, then it's a possibility that Verstappen would want to leave Red Bull. If that happens, then an entire can of worms is opened, and heaven knows who's going to be in that car next year if that's the case. But right now, Verstappen is in the car in 2025. I reckon it's highly likely that Perez will stay there.
Fair enough. I mean, I kind of agree with what you said. You know, he is doing the job for the vast over the quote unquote second drivers. You know, he's certainly doing what needs to be done, one could say. But and I'll come to you about this as well. You know, so we've, you know, there's, you know, once again, you know, the sort of whole, you know, there's the Red Bull dominant side of it, and then also, you know, we've mentioned a bit about the second seat as well. You know, do you think anything can be done about the Red Bull dominance that we're seeing at the minute? Because it certainly seems to be like there's no sign of it slowing down. And also, yeah, you know, if you've got anything to add, you know, sort of about, you know, Liam Lawson, Daniel Ricciardo, Tsunoda, etc., for the remaining seats in the Red Bull family.
About the Red Bull dominance, I think obviously there's been, my take on it, I think, is that a lot of sort of criticisms have maybe been levelled at the aerodynamic testing limits and the cost cap, both of which have been sort of blamed for the fact that Red Bull are locked in kind of so far ahead, and they're now so far ahead that they can basically turn off development a third of the way through the year and still end up with what looks like another rocket ship. I think F1 a lot of the time is far too knee-jerk, and I think we just need to, I'd caution and I'd say hang fire, let this play out, because it's not just about who can spend the most money, and it's not just about who's got the restrictions. It's also about you need to allow the time it takes for people to move between different teams. You know, there's only so much money that can be spent. Red Bull, for example, you need sort of the minds to, remember these are businesses at the end of the day, and you've got to allow for the brain drain to sort of, not brain drain, but like for there to be a moving around of the technical staff that build these cars. So I think that's probably what's in it. Just, we could get to the end of this and we'll find that this is a chapter in a history, but where it didn't work, and okay, fine, whatever, we tried. At least give the cost cap regulations a fair shot. I know it's a bit sort of trust the process, but you know, give it a bit. It's a brand new thing, and we just need to see how it plays out, what happens with it, and we probably haven't got it right completely, but you do need to let things go through their full life cycle. You know, see what happens in 2026 when we get the new cars and things like that. Then we'll know whether or not it's really working. I think it's just gonna, you know, there's always an ebb and flow to these things, and what we're trying to stop is the massive peaks and the massive troughs and swings in performance. We're trying to bring that down to a negative feedback loop so that things roughly end up where they're going. I think that's what we have to, the best thing to do about the Red Bull dominance. And regarding the second seat, I think if you had to pick anyone, you have to pick Lawson, because Ricciardo, as you say, isn't doing anything special. I don't think the V-carb is anything particularly, its highest finish is first in a first practice session at Bahrain, but other than that, the closest it's ever got to the front is 11th place in the qualifying session last week. So I don't think the car is particularly special like we thought it was. I don't see Ricciardo outperforming his teammate. I think you have to put Lawson in just as a punt, honestly, just because he's younger Yuki qualified P9, so clearly I wasn't paying that much attention. But either way, that's nowhere near where we were expecting it. We were expecting it a teeny bit higher up than that. But yeah, I think if you have to take a long-term view, you want to put Liam Lawson in. But then again, I also take the point that, you know, Perez has sorted out the issues, and so far this season has fixed what we lamented about in last year, which was that he wasn't finishing in second. Now he is, and Red Bull are something like 38 points ahead, which is, you know, getting on for almost double the points of Ferrari.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you made a good point about the cost cap there as well. You know, it's the age-old adjective that springs to mind, or adjective, sorry, for this one, is Rome wasn't built in a day. And like you said, we are sort of, you know, sort of, you know, the teams are getting to grips with this new era of cars. Like we say, we've got new engine regs coming in 2026, which are going to simplify and hopefully reduce the cost of the engines a little bit. Obviously, we've got Audi coming in. You know, I referenced it earlier at the start, but Audi have bought a 100% stake in the stake F1 team. That's generally not a pun, by the way. I just realized it as I said it, and I started to get myself in my own little tongue twister. But no, to rephrase that, Audi have bought a 100% stake in the Sauber Group, which is the stake F1 team kick Sauber, I think, on the grid. I'm not sure the name. Just call them Sauber, please. Honestly, it's just easier.
Audi have bought them. That's what.
Yeah, Audi have bought them, and you know, even to the point where we've heard reports that last year, Audi in their base in Germany were running a full 2026 spec engine on the dyno. So you know, so there will hopefully be something that comes into play there. But yeah, you know, we just need to, like you said, we just need to give the regulations some time. So just to round out the show, I just want to ask each of you, who was your driver of the day? So the Grid Talk driver of the day, like Jared mentioned earlier, I'm sitting my driver of the day, both in Grid Talk and on the F1 website, was Ollie Bearman. Jared, I have a feeling you might be about to say the same thing, but who was your driver of the day, mate?
We can't go past Mr. Bearman on his debut.
Absolutely. Alex, who's your vote for driver of the day?
I always try not to pick the obvious ones out of this, but yeah, it's going to have to be Ollie Bearman, really. I mean, it's hard to look past him. He did a fantastic job.
It is a bit hard to look past him, isn't it? You know, given the circumstances and everything. Now, Owen, are you going to make a 3-3, or are you going to throw a spanner at the works? Are you also going to come off mute?
No, I'm not going to come off mute. It's almost a shame I can't give it to the Haas strategist just for the sake of variety, honestly. You know, I guess. And I'm not going to give it Magnussen because I can't give someone who got 20 seconds with a penalty his driver of the day. Like, that's ridiculous. Yeah, no, it's got to be Bear. I mean, this is one of those rare examples where someone just cleaned up. Absolutely cleaned up. He's defied expectation.
I'd go as far to say he's exceeded expectations this weekend. You know, like we said earlier, he was a fraction off getting it into Q3. I think he was 0.036 or 0.039, like Jarrah said. You know, minimal. Bearing in mind, he'd only done one practice session. It was his first time driving an F1 car in a proper competitive setting. I'm talking about qualifying. And he'd only done one practice session in that Ferrari. So, you know, absolute hats off to him. And like one of you, I think, again, it was Jarrah said earlier, big shout out to his dad who gave us lots of entertainment standing next to John Altman in the Ferrari garage. But thank you for joining me. That concludes our 2020, I was going to say 2023, but it's not. It is 2024. And it still feels a bit odd seeing that on the highlights on YouTube. But thank you for joining us. Grid Talk is available on YouTube, where most episodes are recorded live, as well as Amazon Fire, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, Verbal, Pocket Casts. Just search Formula One Grid Talk for our back catalogue of shows with previews and reactions to race results. Please consider supporting the channel on Patreon so we can get mics, lights, and better recording equipment. Also, make sure you are subscribed so you're the first to know when each new weekly episode is released. We'll be back soon, namely next week, for a certain member of this panel's home Grand Prix. Definitely not Jared. Thank you very much for listening to the Grid Talk podcast presented by Bet Online, and goodbye.